to slideshow mode. Okay, good. I hope all of you can hear me, and Greg, can you see my screen? Okay, great.
Yes, your screen is loud and clear, so to speak.
Great. Ed and I have collaborated on this presentation. It obviously concerns archery, as I'm sure you can tell from the first slide. But what we wanted to do was help individuals decide how good their data was and is it good enough. So we did several things, as I'm sure many of you have done over the years. First, you want to assess what accuracy you have and the variety of ways of doing that. You can either use a single comparison star, which I am adamantly against, opposed to, or you can use ensembles. And there are, in fact, reasons for using a single comp in some circumstances. You can also do something called transformation. So you can choose either not transform your data or to transform. Again, I'm a strong proponent of transforming your data. It does require some money in the sense that it needs multiple filters and more time to take your images. What we've also done in this presentation is to unpack the terms precision and accuracy, because they do mean different things, as I hope most of you know. Precision relates actually to your repeatability. It's also referred to as random noise and random error. And it's usually defined by a term called standard deviation. And it means you've determined, calculated, a mean of your images, your magnitudes, and a standard deviation which relates to how they vary from that mean. The other term that often gets confused with that is accuracy. As a chemist, I've been very concerned about that in my analyses. It is actually a bias. It is a systematic error, not a random error. It effectively is how well you agree with a true magnitude. Now, you could ask what a true magnitude means. It's a magnitude that's been accepted by analysis, hopefully through various methods. And hopefully they give the same number. So that's what the known or true magnitude is. In our case, we've chosen to use Landol magnitudes as our reference. I'm sure you've all seen the slide, again, from an archery phenomenon, where we have in the upper left-hand corner a very unrepeatable and a very unreliable measure. In the lower right-hand corner, we have a very repeatable and a very reliable measure. Now, what does that mean, and how can we correlate that to what we do regularly? If you put two hands up in front of your face, you count them, there's certainly two. You take one away, there's one. There's a 100% variation between those two numbers. And typically, when we're doing our analyses, when we may be doing visual observing, we look up at a star in the sky, we turn our head maybe 30 degrees to go to, assuming it's a bright star, we turn our head 30 degrees to a comparison star that has another magnitude. Let's say one was 3 and one was 4. I'm sure you can guess that, in fact, it's not difficult. In fact, it's quite trivial to determine which one is brighter than the other. And if we had a third star that was perhaps fourth magnitude, we could probably make a pretty good estimate that one was at magnitude 3, one was magnitude 4, and one was magnitude 5. But let's assume we want to do better than that. Let's say we wanted to get a 10% accuracy. That's easy, in fact. That's getting to a tenth magnitude difference between our measurements from one to another. In the lower right-hand corner, what we hope to get and requires moderate effort, something that we do regularly, I hope for most of you photometrists, we achieve about a hundredth of a magnitude precision or error. And that's probably what most of us do in our relatively poor skies in suburban environments. It frankly is, as a chemist, I know that it was extremely difficult, not impossible, but difficult, to get within a 10% precision. And that would typically amount to a thousandth of a magnitude or a one day. So those are the ranges of precisions and accuracies that you can achieve. Now, Ed and I did a study with Landolt stars, as we're going to discuss. We chose not to look at variable stars. I'm sure you've all measured the magnitude of one of your stars, like XC Cygni, and then looked at the light curve generator to see how everybody else did. You said, oh my goodness, I'm 2/10 of a magnitude off. That's horrible. And in reality, it might be, but perhaps not in every case, especially if you're using a DSLR. We'll talk about that later. Ed and I have different telescopes and different cameras, as you can see listed here. And I also chose to use some new data from the New Hampshire PSM telescope, which has a CMOS camera, the ASI-183. Because many of you have asked the question in the forums over the last few months, can I use the CMOS camera? It's less expensive than a CCD, though there are expensive ones too. And is that a good idea? We chose to use multiple images, each multiple magnitudes, and used mean analysis. We used multiple filters, obviously, because that's the only way you can really do transformation. We chose Landolt standards. Jordan Silvers has been kind enough to put a table together of standard field stars. This is just an example of that, and if you search on standard fields on the AVSO website, you'll get to this webpage. And it helps you identify where they are in terms of right ascension and declination. These are 12 and 0. There are a 10 minute field of view, and there are two stars. 70 and 34 is the next one down. As we always do, we calibrate our stars. We do bias, dark, and flats analysis. We process our images with VFOT, or LIF photometry. A hint, LIF, Pierre de Pompierre is on the group today, and he's the creator of LIF photometry, which is an excellent photometry program. For our untransformed magnitudes, we conducted VVRI analysis. We used one comp, or we used an ensemble of multiple comps. And we used multiple standard comps in this case, which are Landolt standards. We also transformed our magnitudes. We used one comp in one case, or multiple comps in another. And again, we had multiple targets. We chose Landolt standards, Landolt comps, to be our targets. We calculated means and standard deviations as you normally would. We calculated observed minus known true Landolt magnitudes. We'll see why we computed absolute values of those in a minute. We visualized our results in a regression of O minus K versus B minus V. You'll see those. And we also produced bar plots and whisker and box plots. So I'm going to let Ed take over with what he did with his analysis of five landed fields during the last winter.
Thank you, Ken, and thanks for everyone for joining us today. So I'm going to show you three different views of the analyses that I did on my five fields. The first view is a view of the linear regression of combining all OK values from all fields. This way we got our sample size up. We could do a little bit of big statistics with it. So this is a plot. The x-axis is color. We have things tending towards the blue on the left and things tending towards the red on the right. And then on the y-axis we have the observed minus known magnitude differences, both overestimates and underestimates. That is to say, they're not absolute values. The important thing is not all the dots, although I will show you on the far right, you have a blue and a kind of an orange dot. Those are untransformed values of the same transformed values that are found in the diamond-shaped ones above, or directly above them. The dashed lines are untransformed using one comp or two comps. This is pretty typical for my B filter. And the solid lines show the results of transformed the analysis when they're transformed. The black line is one comp. The red line, which also has is all comps, that is to say, one target at a time, one check and all the other Lando standards used for the entire analysis being an ensemble. And hidden behind that is a two-comp analysis. Now, the sense of this is, the sense of this is if you have transformed your data and you're going, you have a horizontal line at O minus K of 0.0, you are perfectly transformed. The more slope you have, the less perfect the transformation is. The next view shows us, and we're going to unpack this a bit and look at accuracy and precision, and we're going to do this with absolute values of OK. And the reason we use absolute values is the average of minus 1 and plus 1 is 0, which looks perfect. But yet you're one off both ways. So we use absolute values in this particular case. These box and whiskers plots give us an idea of two parameters, well, really three, average and median. And then the size of the box gives us a rough estimate of precision. The smaller the box, the smaller the quadros are in the analysis, the more precise the result is. So on the left-hand side, we have two untransformed results. And on the right-hand side, we have four transformed results, the gray being one comp, the yellow being two comps, the blue being the entire ensemble, and then just for fun, I've also included APAS data for four of the five. So these are data that have not been reduced by us. These are data that are available as APAS data from the CDS. And you will notice, of course, that we do much better transforming than we, in fact, marginally better precise data, at least for the full ensemble, than the APAS data itself. Next slide. This is simply a histogram summarizing the average absolute OK values. And you can see on the left, untransformed data are not as accurate as on the right before use of transform. We can now move to We did a little bit of statistics. There's not very complicated statistics here. We think that the data speak for themselves, but we did a little bit of it. So for the B filter, one comp non-transformed versus one comp transformed, the null hypothesis, there is no difference between the two, is statistically significantly different. However, if we look at one comp transform and our full ensemble transform, statistically, there is no difference in the mean values, even if the precision looks greater with the ensemble. Next slide. So we move to the Cousins I filter, and we have exactly the same sort of plot. We have the dashed lines being the least squares fit for the untransformed data, and the solid lines, all of which are layered over each other, being a view of the transformed data. And for my eye filter in my camera, I get an almost perfect transformation in the Cousins eye filter. The box and whiskers show the precision and accuracy. Left-hand part of the slide again are the two box plots with the untransformed. The three to the right are one, two, and an all ensemble look. Again, the all ensemble look, although the means and the medians are not different in any transformation, we get a little bit more precision when we do a full ensemble. We do not have an APAS example of this because they're in Sloan Eye and not in Cousins Eye. Next slide. This is just a summary of the average OK values for the five different treatments, untransformed on the left and transformed on the right, with virtually nothing to say about the transformed other than they were well transformed. Finally, we look at the V filter. My V filter is particular. It has a very, The transformation coefficients are almost nil. which means that my transformation for these particular data are really no different than the untransformed results themselves. You will note, however, that the OKY axis scale is much different than the OKY axis scale in the other two. Not that you're keeping tabs on that, but all of this occurs between 0.02 and -0.02 OK, which means that, the next slide, there's no difference between transforming and not transforming these data. But there is a caveat to that. That's my filter and my camera. It may not be your filter and your camera. And finally, we look at boring results of the average OKs over all treatments with the V filter, and we see that they are essentially the same. And with that, I'll turn it back to Ken.
Thanks, Ed. I particularly just emphasized one standard field analysis, SA38, because it was up high in the sky for me, since I'm in the Northern Hemisphere. I happen to have a... One second. I have a STL6303 CCD. Again, in CMOS case, it has the ASI183 from CWO CMOS camera. And again, I chose to use the same whisker box plot histogram and regression analysis that Ed showed previously. I've displayed them a little differently here. I've made them in groups of four. The blue ones are obviously blue, green, red, and infrared. And the basic thing I'd like to show here again is consistent with what Ed showed. Typically, the first two of the four boxes are further away, larger O minus K values. In this case, the means, the X's on the screen are about 0.03. If you look at the two that have been transformed, either a single comp or multiple comps, the means, the X's again, are much closer to 0.01. Bottom line is, as you saw in Ed's results and in mine, typically we're getting agreement that is close to 0.01 magnitudes from the true value. In the case of the green, again, you see non-transformed followed by the smaller transformed. You'll see it in the red and the infrared. The differences are not as great. There may be less precision in some cases than in others. But again, this really means that my transformation coefficients, my filters, are closer to the original Johnson-Cousins filters. In other words, I have a coefficient for the color term of 1 and for the filter on magnitude terms of 0. One little interesting thing, I put in my transformation coefficient, TBBV in the case of the Bs, and TVBV, and you'll notice, in fact, that my blue filter transformation coefficient is larger than in the case of the green. And in fact, you can see generally, not exactly, but generally, that the improvement with transformation in the case of the B filters is larger than in the case of the green filters. And there is, in fact, and Gordon Myers and I gave a talk 3 years ago now in England at the AVSL meeting, that showed that you can calculate how divergent your result will be, how your agreement will disperge from the reality, the true value, depending on how big your coefficients are. So I propose that you go and look at that, if you will. A bar graph showing the same thing, with effectively the same results, just a different visualization of the results. Transformation improves the results, and we saw in the box of whiskers that the precision also improved. This is the plot of O minus K versus color. And again, the intent is to show that when you have colors of targets that diverge from the comparison star that you use, in the middle perhaps, you will get a greater divergence from the 0 point. But when you do your transformation, you'll flatten out that curve, which means no matter what your color is, whether it's blue at the left-hand side or red at the right-hand side, you get less divergence from the true value. Again, you can see with very blue stars, We may have been off by 0.03 magnitudes, but when we transform, the difference is down to a hundredth of a magnitude. So I hope that you see that you really can improve the accuracy, this is really accuracy we're talking about here, of your measurements by transforming, and in most cases, using an ensemble versus a single column. This is now, and I think many of you will be interested, this is a CMOS camera. And again, I've deployed the four bars on the left for B, followed by green, followed by red. Ooh, notice a little difference here. What's going on here? Followed by infrared. Again, for the CMOS camera, slight improvement with transformation, as you'd hope. Slight improvement in precision as well. And in fact, the X's on the screen, I hope you can see those, where the means are. You may be off on mean by 0.03 with no transformation, single comp. You may improve to a level with transformation with an ensemble, down again to 0.01 magnitudes of green. Just what you'd hope you would achieve by carrying out these additional procedures. You'll notice this little wrinkle in here. What happened to Ken, to this R filter? It got worse with transformation. In fact, a little wrinkle here is that the camera in New Hampshire on the BSM telescope is not an R, Cousins R filter. It's a Sloan R filter. And in fact, I didn't have the right transformation coefficients used when I did my calculations for this, but I left it in, frankly. I could have repaired it. It shows, in fact, that when you obviously use a magnitude that's not an SR magnitude, but an R magnitude, you clearly, when you transform, will get a poorer result. You can correct for that by using the appropriate transformation coefficients. And in the case of infrared, we've got nice agreement across the board because the coefficients, again, are close to 1 and 0. Again, same results with a different display with bar graphs. And again, in the case of my V filter, if I don't transform, I get a relatively strong slope, 0.057 in this case. And again, at both the red end of the spectrum and at the blue end of the spectrum, I diverge significantly from our ideal zero line. Maybe as point as far as 0.03 to 0.02. But again, when I transform, I get nice results that are much closer to zero. And I wanted to show you, because it's probably the question you're asking most, is do the CCD cameras and CMOS cameras we are able to use today give similar agreement? And I hope you will agree. Again, I'm going to show you a t-test in a second. In general, I think these are both on the same scales. The means with non-transformation are in the order of 0.03. And when we transform on the right of the two sets of bars, we get closer to 0.01, in this case about 0.015. So again, you see the improvement that you get. More importantly, I hope you agree that the similarities between both the CCD results and the CMOS results are quite good. This is now for the V filter, and again, slight improvement. Again, remember my V filter coefficients are quite good, close to 1 and 0, so there's not as much of a difference between non-transform and transform. But again, what I'd like you to see, again, is on the left-hand side with the CCD and the right-hand side with the CMOS, the results are very similar. At 0.034, again, don't stick with one number. One number doesn't mean much of anything. You need to look at the means. So the agreements are very good. I see what I hope you get out of this. Ed, in fact, did this. He's the statistician, I'm not. For the B filter case, comparing the CCD and CMOS, and in the case of the V filter, the P values are not sufficiently good, not less than 0.05, for example. So they were statistically similar, and that's what I hoped you saw visually when you looked at the two slides. So I think we're just about out of time here, and I'll stop and show you a couple of conclusions and recommendations. So, how can you improve your data? The most obvious thing, and the thing that's done not very often, to tell you the truth, is to take multiple images when you're doing your imaging. One image, one magnitude, one concentration as a chemist is not a valid number. It could be, but you saw some of the spans we had in our precision in the other slides. You really should take multiple images. One's a bad number. Two is almost as bad. It either could be one or the other, and they could be quite extreme. Three is a heck of a lot better. 7 to 10 would be ideal, but I think, to be honest with you, most of us are not going to spend the time to take 7 replicate images of the same thing because we want to go on to other targets. Quantity sometimes does drive us to do that. Ideally, when you pick your comparison star, if you matched your comparison star color with your target color, you wouldn't even have to transform at all. You would get a perfect agreement between the two. Again, my preference for all of you is to use multiple comparison stars. And again, in that case, in one image, not multiple images, you can get multiple magnitudes from each of the estimated magnitudes from the target from each of those individual comparison stars. So it's sort of a shortcut to take a single image, but get multiple magnitudes to calculate a mean from. Again, if you can spend the money and the time and effort, get some multiple filters, either BVRI, which are the old standard, or perhaps the Sloan standards. We all know it's getting more difficult to buy some of these. Hopefully they won't go away completely, so get them while you can. Ideally, I propose also that you transform your magnitudes, as I hope you've seen the improvement we've shown you previously. Again, this is just a repeat of Ed's slide from previously. Again, this happens to be a very nice example. We have the two boxes on the left with 75th percentile and 25th percentile show wide divergence of O minus K. In fact, it gets to approach greater than a tenth of a magnitude. And on the right-hand side, much improved precision and much improved accuracy. That's what you hope you get from transformation. And you can see the APAS data has similar precision and accuracy. So we're in good company. And similar slides that I've had from my CCD. I won't go through that with any great care. And just a general summary, how can you improve your data precision, and on the next slide, your accuracy? I think statistically what Ed and I showed was with the dark blue arrow is that when you go from non-transformation to transformation, you show statistically significant improvement. But when you go necessarily from a single comp to a multiple comp situation, light blue boxes, arrows, and that means it's not as confident a result. Same thing is found for accuracy. So, how much accuracy, how much improvement have we achieved? With a single comp non-transformation, you may have something on the order of a tenth of a magnitude difference, bias, with your results. As you do an ensemble, you may improve that to 0.05. As you transform with a single comp, you may get down to 0.03. And with an ensemble transformation, you may get to less than 0.01. So these are ways of improving that. I put question marks here because especially for you DSLR people out there who have standard DSLR cameras with standard RGB filters in them, their coefficients, you will find, hopefully, are significantly divergent from 1 and 0. And in fact, these non-transform results in those cases may approach several tenths of a magnitude. Yes, I meant that specifically, several tenths of a magnitude bias between your result and the true or known result. So, I will stop there, and I think we're finished on time, ahead of time. And my main question for all of you as you ask your questions, and I hope you do, is what are you willing to do? Yes, it takes time. It takes effort. In some cases, frankly, it takes some money. But I hope that all of you understand what we've tried to show here, and I hope we've given confidence to those CMOS camera owners out there that, yes, their results are appropriate and adequate and in good agreement with the CCD measurements that we've been doing up till now.
Ken, I might make a couple of comments. You inspired me to actually get my 80-millimeter refractor hooked up with filters and a CMOS camera, and I was quite pleased with the results. So I'm going to use it as a Brightstar monitor camera for my own purposes. The other thing is that I spent a lot of time as an evolutionary biologist doing what's called ecological forecasting, which essentially taking geographic data and figuring out what the niche of a species is and then predicting what would happen to it with things like global climate change. And what ground into my psyche was, if you want to find out how good you are, you have to try to measure things for which you already know the results. And this is something that anyone with a CCD, a CMOS or DSLR camera can do with these land-owned fields, because now there's a variety of them that one can access almost any time of the year. But don't be too put off by the land-owned uncertainties. As I understand it, and I may be wrong, when you see a magnitude with a land-owned error of 0.001, that's actually the error of a mean of means, which means that it's actually a standard error, not a standard deviation. And so if you unpack that, the actual average standard deviation is the square root of the number of nights for which the measurements were taken times the error. So it could be if you did 10 nights and you had a 0.001 standard error, which is the correct way to do it. But if you want to look at any average night standard deviation, probably about 0.01. So don't be put off by the fact you're not getting 0.001 accuracy. To do that, you would have to do 10 nights, not one night.
And I'd like to show something really quick. If you guys can stop sharing your screen, I want to emphasize that point with a nice visual.
Yep. Stop sharing here. I think you should be able to share again, Greg.
Okay. So if you can see my screen now, I believe you guys can. I have the same exact data taken from data that I presented yesterday on a blockbuster binary taken by an AAVSO individual. They took a time series of data, and on the left, you see their time series. And if you're not used to looking at these time series, you don't see any patterns in there. But by taking means of data and using the standard error technique that Ed just talked about, you get the light curve on the right with the same exact data. And that is the proper light curve. So taking means using the standard error will actually get you much better data for use. And as a professional astronomer, this is what I actually do when I take the ensemble of data that gets presented to me by multiple observers. I often use this technique anyway.
I think that's a really good example. And the other thing, Greg, is, you know, a lot of people worry about, well, you know, especially with visuals, well, you're an overestimator, you're an underestimator. But if everyone has some sort of systematic bias, but if it's not the same systematic bias, the means turn out to be just fine.
So we should probably move on to the Q&A. You guys want me to read out the Q&A to you since you're two people?
If you could, Greg, that would be great.
Sure. Unless, Stella, you wanted to do that? No? Perfect. Okay, so let me stop sharing my screen. Just give me 1 second. Sorry, I'm on multiple computers. All right. So Molly Wakelin asked, what does transforming mean? And is it necessary to do if you're using a CCD in the linear regime with photometric filters?
Ken, do you want to take that?
I'm embarrassed to say, Greg, I was reading another question here and forgot to listen. So if you could repeat.
Sure. What does transforming mean? And is it necessary to do if you're using a CCD in a linear regime with photometric filters? And that's from Molly.
Yes, Molly. Yes. Transformation is correcting your results to the equivalent to the same filter used by Johnson Cousins way back when. Your manufacturer didn't manufacture it exactly the same. It's probably the same formula, but not quite the same. So your filter will not be quite the same in its color characteristics as the original Johnson Cousins. So yes, you need to calculate your transformation coefficients by analyzing a standard field like M67. If you use TG on the website, Transformation Generator, you can do that. And then you can apply those transformation coefficients with TA in VFOP, Transformation Applier, and transform your magnitudes to standard magnitudes. I think I answered that question. I hope I did.
I think so. It's a second order of correction, but a very important second order of correction.
Yes, it's on the order of generally for CCD cameras with Johnson Cousins filters, as you saw, on the order of a few hundredths of magnitude. In the case of DSLR, where you don't have Johnson Cousins filters, but an RGB filter set, those differences can be on the order of tenths of magnitudes. Keep that in mind.
So Michael Freeberg points out that for TG, I assume the T is actually transformed, but for the green, the G filter essentially from a DSLR is also a benefit to transform the data. I would argue that it's almost always a benefit to transform the data as long as you do what Ken said and transform the data to the right filter.
Yes, yes. So you can use your DSLR photometry and report that as TG, TR, and TV if you desire. Or you can choose to go to the effort, I hope you will, of determining your coefficients yourself and doing a more correct and accurate transformation.
So let me just ask a quick question, since some people are going to be doing this idea of transformations. Is that transformation coefficient, do you need to do that once ever for your telescope filter current combination? Once per year? Once per night? How often do you need to do a transform or a coefficient calculation?
Well, yeah, it depends on what you're doing. So some people do all sky photometry, and they essentially do it every night. This is the professional way of doing it. I try to do it, at least two or three times, sometimes four times a year, kind of varying with the seasons, just to check up on things.
My best recommendation is that you do it every 6 months and look at your own results and see how much they vary. As from my practice with my own telescope, I have a coefficient that's more than a year old from the more recent one I did, and they are within the same standard deviation, within the same error band as the original ones. So, yes, they don't change very much, hopefully. Try it more than, perhaps every 6 months or every year, do them again and compare them to see how much they change. That's the same plan.
So the takeaway I get from that is that getting these transformation coordinates is not an expensive thing to do in terms of your time.
Well, I try to take three nights. So right now, NGC 7790, my most favorite one, is up. And I'll take three nights of data, and I'll do transformation generator on those. Then I'll average them out and, try to make sure that I don't have any kind of wonky results.
And is that three full nights or just three time during 3 months?
I usually do 10 images, 10 field images, and then I take the average value, et cetera, et cetera, just like we do with doing our accuracy program.
Okay. So let's move on to the next question. David Kraft says, I'm very new, taking no data yet. My Johnson Cousins filters are modern with rectangular, also known as flat top passband shapes. Is there a reference showing the best way to code?
The best way to code them?
Code. LPE. I apologize for my mispronunciation. How do you deal with the modern filters compared to the Johnson Cousins filters? I think the answer is transformation.
Yes, and in fact, I'd like to give a shout out to Gordon, who's listening right now, who admires for creative teaching. There are a few cute little trick workarounds. The bottom line, as we all know, right now, Sloan magnitudes don't exist on the comparison database. They will soon, I hope, exist. And you can do a direct Sloan to Sloan transformation. However, there is a trick to allow you to transform from your Sloan magnitudes to a Johnson-Cousin magnitudes by just renaming the filter in VFOT and pretending it's a V magnitude instead of a TG magnitude. And you will then get the transformation coefficient that is real for that Sloan G filter. And it will be higher than 1, higher than 1.1 in most cases, something like 1.2. So yes, that's the way you would do it. I hope I made it somewhat clear. You send an email or a post at some point on photometry or thought, I'll help give you a further answer.
So I've been deleting some questions that asked that we've already answered. So I apologize to those people for not announcing their names, but out of time consideration, I've been doing that. So there's a question of, can people use comparison colors for ensemble photometry that would do the transform?
Okay, I think that relates to what I said earlier. If you happen to have selected a comparison stop that had an identical color to your target stop, you in fact would not have to transform at all. Effectively, you have the same color for both, and they should not be in correction. Did that answer the question, Greg, or not quite?
I think it did. I'm not sure if the person, I feel like it did.
I will answer it one more way. If you use an ensemble of comparison stars, they clearly have a variety of colors compared to the target. And if you assume that you've got colors that are both bluer and redder than the target, the average of those colors is probably closer to what the target is. And in that case, you would get, again, a closer agreement and a better agreement with the known magnitude. So it sort of helps you do. Yeah.
Okay. I agree with that. The one thing you should be aware about is if for some reason your target happens to be a very red or a very blue object, that the ensemble averaging in this case may actually make things slightly worse.
Nice.
In that case, what you want to do is you want to take an ensemble of stars with the same color.
Yes.
So let's see. We have a question from Miroslav Smolka. Which is better, averaging a series of images and processing the resulting image, or processing each image individually and averaging the results? How long do you have for an answer?
Yeah, Ed and I argued about this all the time. I'm sort of going to punt and say honestly, they are similar, perhaps not identical. I'm not a mathematician, so you can't quote me on that. But they both give you multiple magnitudes. In one case, you need multiple images to do that. In one case, one image and multiple comparison stars. I think you can probably accept that they are meant to give similar representative values of them. So I think I'll leave it there, and if any other mathematician wants to chime in, so be it.
I'll chime in, and so I would say that years ago, when detectors had bad read noises or had large, or well, dark current really was effective, but had large read noises, there was a lot to be said for observing for longer and minimizing the amount of times that you had to read out your information. However, many modern detectors are themselves at higher read noises, or lower read noises. So you can get into the nitty-gritty. As long as you're in the regime where you're getting at least 25-ish counts electrons after your gain, so 25 divided by your gain, I think that they are effectively the same. And so because of that, I'm actually more likely to say take shorter observations and get the multiple data personally. You'll take a slight hit to the error, but you also may find interesting things that may actually be physically relevant. But that was based on my talk yesterday. And I don't know if you disagree or agree.
I got no dog in that fight.
Fair enough. All right. So, anonymous attendee asks, for new observations to be maximally consistent with past observations, precisely which BVR filter set does AAVSO recommend? Do we recommend one?
No. I guess to be honest with you, trying to correct your result to agree with some past result is an exercise in futility. You have to accept, do the things that we've done. Prove to yourself what your own accuracy and precision are using your own images. And then trust those. The bottom line is, historically, comparison stars were selected from a variety of different catalogs. And that is the best way of getting poor accuracy. If you look at some of the catalogs that are available now, I just picked the name Tycho out, you will not get the same reported magnitude as you will from APAS, for example. Fortunately now, virtually all of the comparison star sequences that are created by the sequence team use the APAS catalog. So internally, they're all consistent. They may be off by some bias from the Tycho, certainly are, but at least they're internally consistent. In fact, most people, like Joe Patterson at CPA, Center for Vacuum Astrophysics, adjusts all of our imagers, our observers' data, so he corrects for this bias that may exist from one person's comparison stars to one person's GAN. In reality, that's what's done when you get to the really small differences that exist between one observer and another. There's just no way to avoid that we'll potentially have a difference. You just try to minimize that to the best of your ability.
I think this is related to another question that says, or Matthew notes, perhaps I wasn't fully understanding, but is it acceptable to transform using, say, APAS magnitudes in field rather than Landolt standards taken in the same night?
Yes and no. The best choice would be what's called a primary standard. And in fact, our Landolt standard magnitudes are accepted as primary standards. I'm sure Arlene and his standard error of the mean typically approach 0.005 or so magnitudes. I think Arnie will agree, I'm sure he's on here somewhere, that the APAS magnitudes don't have quite that same precision. They generally have many fewer observations. In fact, that's one of the reasons. And they typically have precision of the order of 0.02. So again, it depends on what catalog you're using, what set of comparison stars you decide, and how good or bad your transformation coefficients are. You do more effort, you get better results. That's the bottom line.
So Brad Beats basically said we have many aging astronomers and aging CCD cameras. As we're forced to replace these and adapt, I hope he's talking about the cameras. I'm interested in the other type of transformation from CCD cameras to CMOS cameras.
Transformation how? Buying instruments or a difference in the photometer?
I'm not sure which. Maybe he means both. I think he means the transformation from us using CMOS cameras, but also then applying the transformation techniques.
Well, I hope, Brad, that we showed, in fact, there really is no difference between the CMOS result, at least for the cameras we're talking about, and the CCD cameras that Ed and I used. They gave equivalent results. We used the same transformation techniques in both cases. And in fact, in general, you're still using the same Johnson Cousins filter in either of the two cameras. In fact, in the case of ESM New Hampshire, those filters that are used on the CMOS camera were those that originally used on the CCD camera, the ST10, that was used in New Hampshire. I hope that answers your question in some way, Brad.
So I'm just cognizant of the time. I'm happy to stay here and answer questions. It's now 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, and